This is How Have You Not Seen, a movie podcast where every week we fill in the gaps in each other's cinematic knowledge by asking important questions like, whoa, you never watched Little Children? Or,
you seriously never saw The Phantom of the Opera? Or,
how have you not seen Hard Candy? Welcome, everyone, back to How Have You Not Seen? I am your co-host, Carson Betts.
And I am your other co-host, Caroline Thompson.
This is a movie podcast where every week one of us brings one of our favorite movies the other hasn't seen.
We talk about it.
We go and watch the movie.
And then we talk about it some more.
It's going to be, I'm not even going to say. Here's what I want to start this episode with. A couple of things. Ready? We're going to do some housekeeping. One, it's the luck of the Irish. Oh, it's the end. Oh, it's St. Patrick's month. It continues on. That's one. We're continuing St. Patrick's month, a month where we discuss only films in which Patrick Wilson has a leading role. Two.
Yep.
Usually when we review movies that have sensitive content in them, the expectation is that you're probably going to go watch the movie between the first two parts. And as a result, we give our content warning in the second half of the episode. I'm going to give the content warning at the beginning of this episode. If you think that you are at all squeamish about anything that has to do with sexual assault or pedophilia, I'm going to say just don't listen to this episode at all. Just skip it altogether. Three, we're doing what I would like to refer to as a How Have You Not Seen special investigation. Are you ready for that, Caroline?
Yes, I suppose.
Here's the special investigation. There are some podcasts, you get like your serials. There's a lot of like true crime podcasts in which they try and answer a question. Oh, did someone commit a murder? Oh, was there foul play? The question that we're going to investigate in this podcast is, does Carson Betts hate the movie Hard Candy? That's the question.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, this is the premise of the podcast is usually that we bring movies that we like. I think I like this movie. I also think that I might just fucking hate it. So I'd like to discover that with you.
I just want to say that I am excited to watch this because I love Patrick Wilson.
Yes.
I just want to say that I haven't seen Moonfall.
You haven't seen Moonfall?
No.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's not too late. We can switch right now.
No, it's too late. No, we have to.
I haven't seen Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, Bone Tomahawk. Also a very rough movie, but for a very different reason.
Yeah, but for a very different reason. And we are for St. Patrick's Month because we had to do my 30th birthday special, which fell into the last week or the first week of this month. I was going to bring... We're only doing three Patrick Wilson movies. I was going to bring another one. It was going to be The Conjuring. We could have had so much fun this month. I said, Phantom of the Opera. And Carson said, two really hard-hitting dramas about sexual assault of minors.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, because it's very interesting to me that Patrick Wilson was in these two movies in the span of like 2.5 years.
Yeah,
and then got
also
married in between them.
But he also was in Moonfall last year.
He was. We'll do Moonfall on the Patreon sometime. I think.
Okay. All right.
Moonfall's a great Patreon movie.
Okay.
Moonfall's so fucking stupid. What do you know about Hard Candy?
I know that it's apparently about pedophilia in some way or another.
Yes.
And it's funny because when I meant to say this a few weeks ago when we were discussing Little Children, but when we started the movie, I was kind of like, oh, wait, no, this isn't the film that's about pedophilia. That's Hard Candy.
Mm.
And then we got partway through that movie and I went, oh, no, I guess it's just both. I guess it's just both. But yeah, so apparently it is about that in some way, shape or form. Additionally, it is stars Patrick Wilson.
Correct.
I don't think I know anything else about it. Is the poster for this film A Child in a Bear Trap?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, yes. Great. I'm sure I was doing a bunch of homework like years earlier this year when we were compiling all of our things. And I'm sure I saw that poster. But yeah. That's all I know.
Do you know who directed this movie?
I do not.
He directed a movie that we've covered on this show before.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. 2 years ago, I believe. The Twilight Saga Eclipse.
Oh, my God.
Slade.
Why? Okay. I just lost.
30 Days of Night and the Twilight Saga Eclipse.
Okay, I just lost a lot of my stoke to watch this movie, actually. But.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this was his first feature film. So, with that being said, we're going to move right into our game for the week. We're going to be doing Rotten Tomatoes Price is Right. For those of you who have not joined us before, not played this game with us, it's played a lot like it sounds. I have gone to the film critic review aggregator website, Rotten Tomatoes. I have found three films. I have not looked at the scores, I should say that. I've essentially found three films that are on that website. I'm going to list the three films. Caroline and I are going to guess what we think is closest without going over to the critics' consensus score for that movie. And then when we come back, we're going to reveal the scores. We're going to see who won. Caroline, are you ready?
As ready as I'll fucking ever be, my God.
Fantastic. We gotta have some fun. We gotta have some fun before this movie. So we're gonna start with Hard Candy.
Film about pedophilia that is directed by one of the Twilight directors. And it's Eclipse, which is the worst one, probably.
Yeah, worst one. I think so.
Yeah, like. Actually, I think my official ranking has Breaking Dawn Part 1 lower than Eclipse. I think Breaking Dawn Part 1 I list as my least favorite, but regardless.
Those are the two most boring ones, so they are definitely the two worst.
Yes. Shit, dude. I don't know. We're talking about it on the podcast, so I'm assuming it's not like a dumpster fire. I'm assuming it's not terrible. I'm going to say 64%.
64.
I don't know. I could be 40 off in either direction. Well, I guess yeah, I could be 40 under because that would be 104, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good guess. I'm going to maybe be an asshole and just say 67. I think fuck that's a pretty
yourself.
Good. Yeah, go fuck myself. Okay. Movie number two. Candyman, specifically the recent 2021 version. Figured there'd be more Rotten Tomatoes scores for it.
Yeah. Oh, God. You see that? You ever see that?
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine.
Very okay.
Yep.
It is an extremely tense and atmospheric and well-directed nothing burger.
Yep. And then Nia DaCosta got schlorped up by the Marvel machine, so.
Yep. It was one of those things where, because that film was so anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was so anticipated that like me and like a few of my friends, we like got together and like some of us had never seen the original, some of us it had been years, and we're like, no, like let's watch the original, like let's like do like a whole ass movie night where we like sit the fuck down, watch the original, discuss it afterwards. And we're like, this thing is cooking with gas. We're like, this thing rules so hard. This movie's so good. And then the new one came out and was pretty not great. And it was a huge letdown. But I seem to recall critics going kind of easy on it. I seem to recall pretty much audiences being like, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Like some good visuals, some good scary stuff. Yaya
Yaya's great.
Yeah, I mean, he's always great. Yaya and Coleman Domingo is always really great.
Coleman Domingo is good in everything.
I know they're both, I mean, they are both truly, like, truly some of our most, like, straight up, like, capital R, capital D, like, reliant, dependable actors. Like,
mm-hmm.
they can really elevate fucking anything, those two.
I should see Rustin, but every time I see the trailer for Rustin, I go, this does not look good.
The thing that I have heard about Rustin is it is Coleman Domingo give in an Oscar bait movie.
Mm.
And because, as we mentioned, Coleman Domingo is so rock fucking solid in everything yep. he does, that it's like, okay, he's giving an Oscar performance that is, like, really, truly good. That is in the most cliche Oscar bait obvious movie in years, but he does. It's like there is a mismatch there, which makes sense, because people, I've heard that he is truly very good in it, and that overall the movie is kind of not. I haven't heard that it's terrible. I've not even heard that it's terrible. I've just heard that it's it's Oscar bait. That being said, Candyman is, I am going to say Candyman 2021 Candyman. Mm-hmm. Let's say, seem to recall critics going kind of easy on it. I'm going to say 72.
It's a good guess. I think it's
the movie looks great.
It looks really good. That scene in the school bathroom, I think about that scene a lot. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good scenes. I think about the apartment that Yaya lives in a lot. It's a really cool apartment. Yeah. I think it's a little higher than that. I'm going to say 79.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's in that 70 range, though. That sounds about right. All right. Third movie.
Walk Hard.
Get Hard.
Get Hard. Oh, no. God
Get
damn
hard.
It.
Get Hard. Even weirder. Will Ferrell and... Yeah.
That Will Ferrell and... Who's the other main person in that?
Kevin Hart.
Okay.
Blank on his name. What? You know, he's in every movie. You know, the guy who's in every movie.
I have not seen this movie. This is the one where the poster is Will Ferrell with, like, lock braids.
With cornrows,
right?
Yeah.
An interesting cultural artifact, to be certain.
He's going to prison. He needs to learn from Kevin Hart, the hardest man and street guy we all know.
Is have you seen this film?
I saw 1 hour of this movie once, and I said, it was simultaneously somehow not as offensive as I would assume, but also because of that, more boring than I would assume.
Yes. Because that's the thing, is I could see that concept being horribly, horribly racist.
Yeah.
And I could see that same log line, like that same just like idea for a movie being like a very, 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 very cutting satire.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that it's Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart, two guys who their whole thing is just like, I don't know, what if I was silly? What if I was a funny little guy on TV? Like,
silly and likable.
Yeah. Like, what if I played not great people, but in a way that was really like entertaining and fun for people to watch and laugh at? Like, I can't imagine this movie being anything. So I'm going to say 32%.
I think people probably thought it was blander than that. I'm going to say 58.
Gotcha.
Tell you what, quick side game recast it. I think the Jeremy Strong, Daniel Kaluuya version of Get Hard would probably be awesome.
That's what I'm saying. That's the cutting satire.
Yeah, the cutting satirical, like, dark. Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Caroline, are you ready to engage in this special investigation?
Yeah, let's go see if either of us likes this movie.
Let's find out. I don't know. Let's find out. All right, let's go watch Hard Candy.
Hi, everyone. This is Caroline with How Have You Not Seen? Normally, this is where we would put an ad break, and we are going to direct you all, starting in with our 2024 season, for the remainder of the season, and hopefully not much longer after that, but who knows, we are going to ask that in lieu of following one of our sponsor links, which we love and we're so thrilled to have them, we are going to ask you all to head over to PCRF.net. That is the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. And if you are a fan of the show, if you're listening to the show and you're hearing this and you do have some money to spare, we are going to ask that in this time you send some money over there. That would really mean a lot to us. As such, we are also going to be donating all of our January Patreon funds to the PCRF as well. We just really think that at this time, that's something that's really important to do. So again, that is PCRF.net. That is the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Anything you can give, it all goes towards helping children on the ground in Gaza and in the West Bank and in Palestine. So thank you all so much for listening, and we're going to get back to the show.
And we're back.
We are back.
We are back. We have a game to return to, but first off, Caroline, what did you think of Hard Candy?
I understand why in the first half said this is going to be an investigatory podcast. Is Hard Candy a good movie?
Not even a good movie, just do I hate it?
Yes, fair enough.
Yes.
Because I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I think there's a lot to discuss, and I'm going to make a very, very, very crazy statement, and then we can return to the game and we can return to this later. But so when I saw Promising Young Woman,
oh no,
part of like my big kind of review of that was like, and I was way too nice at the time. Emerald Fennell has gone on to prove she is a terror, and I regret any goodwill I ever gave her. But
she's your mortal enemy.
When I first simply saw Promising Young Woman in a cinema, I said a big part of my review is like, this film addresses a lot of topics, has a lot of stances, and I think that's admirable. However, I think most any good kind of like political, social, whatever message you are going to derive from watching this film is going to come more from, maybe this film didn't handle this great, as opposed to the film doing a thing that is like interesting and good and thought provoking, if that makes sense. It's more of like, this is okay. Why isn't it working better? And that helps you arrive at some conclusions about the subject matter more so than the film having something really, really like incisive to say about said subject matter, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. I think that maybe, especially on a second watch, that is my major overwhelming thought is like, well, I don't actually think that this movie has that much on its mind. I think that it has a premise. And I think that it has a lot of like tense filmmaking and two very, very skillful performances. And that is about it.
Skillful is a great word.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back to the game before we continue. Play yes, Rotten Tomatoes and Price is Right. Of course, first is the movie we're talking about today, Hard Candy. Caroline said 64. I said 67. And holy shit. I got it right on the money. That is 67.
67?
67. Okay. Congratulations, me, on winning my own game. I'm so cool and smart.
Yeah.
Next movie is the 2021 Candyman. Caroline, you said 72. I said 79. And smartest man alive, I have won the game this week because I got two in the row. It is 84. It's close.
Okay, wow.
Over. Look that is good for Candyman.
I'm going to be honest. That's a little high. That's a little high for that movie. movie, I think, personally.
But also think about it in the binary Rotten Tomatoes world that we talk about all the time. If you're walking out of that movie and you have to either give the thumbs up or the thumbs down, I feel like most people are going to, you know,
see, that's my thing. It's a very narrow miss. For me, it's like, this thing looks great. The performances are awesome. It completely, I think, kind of whiffs doing anything interesting with the subject matter. And for me, Candyman is like a very near miss. Kind of feels like a film that got lost in an edit.
Oh, yeah, I feel that 100%. And also, they didn't finish the script in time and they just kind of had to start shooting. Third one, Get Hard. You said 32. I said 58. That is a double bust. It is 28%.
Damn.
Audience score, wow. 45.
Okay, so still not super hot on it. A little bit hotter than us film critics up in our ivory towers of...
Yes, even the plebeians did not like it that much. Oh, God. All right, so where the hell do you even begin with Hard Candy?
Okay, so I actually have a point that I want to make super quickly. And,
please.
And also, too, like, obviously, if you are listening, like, we always do this. It's, like, it's smart and nice and, like, I think important. But, like, hopefully, if you are listening this far in the podcast, have watched this film, so you kind of know the subject matter and you kind of know, like, the premise of this film. However, huge content warning for, like, sexual abuse, grooming, like, pedophilia, you know, sexual violence of many, many sorts, et cetera, et cetera. Also, I want to start very quickly by just saying, let's be very cognizant of the fact that Elliot Page is a trans man who transitioned after making this movie. So the character is named Haley, and that character can canonically be a woman, but the actor is Elliot Page, who is a man, pronouns are he and him. So let's just be, make sure we
absolutely
know whether we're talking about the actor or the character when we are using language.
The thing I say all the time, actually a very normal thing for someone to play a character that does not share their gender. You know, historically, 100%. A very normal thing, actually.
Yeah, no, 100%. Okay. I think this movie is very okay. I think kind of what you said a few minutes ago, it has a premise. And boy, howdy, does it have a premise. And I think that premise takes maybe one or two too many twists and turns. And I am almost... In a weird way, I am almost more interested in the red herring movie that this film sets up in the first 20 minutes than in what the film ends up being. Which is whatever. I mean, that's not the movie that exists. And so the movie that does exist is one that I don't really know who this movie is for. You know?
Director David Slade and writer Brian Nelson, I think, is who this movie's for.
Yeah. Because it is kind of this thing of, like, I am not a survivor of child sexual violence, which, I'm not going to sit here and speak for folks who are. And if folks, and it's important too, that, like, different people find different things empowering for different reasons. And, like, for example, if you look back, like, when Promising Young Woman came out, there were a lot of folks who are like, I'm a survivor of this kind of, like, experience. And this film insults me. And then there were other people on the other side who said, I am a survivor of this experience, and like, right on, fuck yeah, thanks Emerald. And like, whatever, that is their opinion to have, right? Like, but so different things are empowering for different people for different reasons. So I don't want to sit here and say, like, if you are a child or if you're a survivor of like grooming, that this film shouldn't feel empowering and cool and interesting to you. But I can't imagine that it does.
Yeah.
I can't imagine somebody who like lived through something like that feels like, fuck yeah, you know what I want to watch is like 2 hours of Elliot Page really getting back at the guy,
yeah,
like very violently, you know? And I think too that like, because the film does kind of end with this, like it is a revenge film and we don't know that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't really fully get that until the very end. Right.
But even, yeah, but even is it, but go on. I do want to kind of challenge that, but go on. Yeah.
Well, sure. But on its face, if we zoom out and we look at not the way the plot unfolds, but like the canon of this cinematic universe, if you will, Elliot Page's character, Haley, was like, knew this person who was murdered,
mm-hmm,
figured it out and went back and killed the, you know, the people who committed the crime.
Yeah.
And we don't fully find that out until like literally the last like 3 minutes of the film. It's hinted at and it's kind of like we know that there's some connection here, but we don't fully get that until like literally 2 minutes before the end of the film. But that is ostensibly what this film is, right?
Yeah.
Is it's kid genius, yeah, solves murder and gets back at murderer for doing, you know, for doing murder of somebody,
yeah,
that this character cares about.
Yeah.
And so it's ostensibly a revenge movie, but it doesn't have the fun of a revenge movie, and it doesn't, no, of like a real revenge movie, and it doesn't have kind of thematic like revenge will destroy you thing,
yeah,
of a lot of other revenge
movies. It's neither thing. It's
right.
You kind of expect it to go one of two ways, where it is either, and maybe that is also a version of the movie that, like you said, fulfills the promise of like the first 15, 20 minutes before the initial twist, where it is like, okay, the movie is solely sexual predator tries to harm a child. That child turns out to be a lot smarter than the predator had intended. And she, in, you know, kind of common, you know, it almost becomes like a slasher movie. It's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's like this girl gets out from this situation, turns into a haunted house movie. And like, that is a movie in which you are so clearly on Elliot Page's side and like watching this character escape the situation could be thrilling and disturbing and scary, but also, you know, it's pretty morally clear. You can also see what I kind of, especially the first time I watched this movie, assumed and was beginning to think the premise of this movie is like, okay, well, you think the premise of the movie is going to be that, but actually, no, it's totally the opposite. The premise of this movie is like, this guy is a pedophile. As to whether or not he has actually ever harmed a child, that's kind of up to question.
Mm-hmm.
But the child that he is, you know, that it has actually been, you know, actually is the predator in this situation. And the child is like a sociopath. Like the child is a Hannibal Lecter kid and, you know, no one's going to miss a pedophile. So that's the person that she chooses to predate upon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that either. It's, and that, no, you know, that movie maybe is certainly more morally complex, but you know, it can be morally challenging. It can still have a point of view. You can be like, okay, well, actually, maybe I sympathize for the character that I did not necessarily think I'd sympathize for. This movie is neither thing because it wants to constantly keep you guessing and keep you in the dark as to Haley's intentions. You're never really quite sure who you're supposed to be rooting for.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it, think that doesn't always work to the film's advantage.
No.
Obviously. Because no. I think there were multiple moments when, like, I mean, hey, a lot of acting theory theory has been written about, like, you know, do you need to fully empathize with your character, or are you allowed to judge your character, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you inhabit the reality of the truth as that character would see the world, right? And so, like, to that end, Patrick Wilson is doing a phenomenal job playing a very realistic portrait of a man who is very scared and upset.
Yes, and yes.
As human beings, like, I talked about this a long time ago when you were talking about Succession, where, like, I think one of the really brilliant things that Succession does is it takes these absolute monsters, like these horrible, terrible, awful people, and grounds their actions in a real human psychology. So, like, you're sitting here watching Kendall get fucked over by his brother, and you feel so bad for the guy. But, like, and it constantly, like, for me, I was constantly wrestling with that. Like, I see a human being in deep psychological pain, and that is upsetting. But also, the only reason this man is in pain is because he's a monster, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And it's kind of, this movie kind of does that without that kind of, like, satirical or political bent to it. So I'm just watching Patrick Wilson, a very handsome, I like a lot as an actor and as an artist. I see him giving a very realistic portrayal of a man very in distress. And, like, it raises that question of, like, am I supposed to be rooting for him? Because it's this weird thing, because, like, with the revenge thing for Haley, is it's like, I mean, like, honestly, like, Wilson kind of says it, and, like, I hate to be like, the character's kind of right because he's a horrible person, but it is that thing he says, like, he's like, if you hurt somebody, it's gonna haunt you forever, like, and he is right, like, that. In that moment, he is saying that ultimately to be let go, right? But it's like, that's kind of where I thought the movie was going to go, is this thing of, like, you know, like, at what point does she cross a line and become a monster like him, and, like, whatever, like, what is justice and all of this stuff? And the film doesn't really grapple with that, but it's like, he is right in that idea of, like, I don't know, like, I don't know. I think that this film kind of plays the ending for Haley as, like, a cool badass hero cop ending, which is, like, on one hand fine, but on the other hand, it's like, on the other hand, it's just like, the film is trying to be so dark and gritty and psychologically real that, like, you can't help but be like, oh man, this kid's fucked forever.
Like, yeah, well, I think that, like, I mean, I yeah. think the kid was fucked before she got there, but...
Well, sure, but, like...
Yeah, yeah, but I get what you're saying, yes.
It's like, you can't help but think, like, okay, what are the psychologically real implications of, like, what is going to happen in... And, like, after this movie, and it's just like, well, like, it was kind of right in that moment of, like, this is going to ruin your life. And, like, we don't ever see that, but, like, the way that this film is so kind of, like, psychologically, like, played. Yeah.
I think what the movie wants to suggest, and maybe what the intention of it was on a script level, because you do have all these, you're getting the breadcrumbs of, like, what happened. I feel bad. I don't remember the name of the victim girl.
But,
you know, did he do this thing? You know, did he kidnap and kill this girl? What happened there? And I think that it's interesting that there are some moments where you get these little glimpses of, and I truly do. I think it comes down to Patrick Wilson, who has been the focus of this entire month for us, obviously being a very good actor and just giving a lot more subtext to lines that maybe should not have them. But, like, I find in the beginning, the fact that, like, immediately he's just like, call the police, I'll go to jail. And, like, I think that line is written as a way that character, like, that's a tactic that character is using trying to get out of the situation. But Wilson plays it with this level of resign that is really interesting, because I think that he's trying to imply that, like, no, this character does think that he should probably go to prison. Like, has thought a lot about, like, what if I get caught? What if I turn myself in? Is that where I should be? Do I just need to, you know, walk to the police station and give myself up? Like, what does that mean? What is my, you know, what? Because obviously he's been living with this thing, you know. And then the reveal at the end is essentially, well, okay, he didn't do it, but he watched. And maybe that's just as bad. And that
well,
is...
And then,
yeah. It,
but then
but did he,
Haley
but
says...
Did he even?
Yeah, because then Haley's thing that she hits back with is that exact thing of just like, oh, that's funny because that's exactly what the other guy said before I got to him.
Yeah.
Or like when before I did the same exact thing to him.
Which is such like a cool badass moment for her, but I think that the initial choice is a lot stronger. I think that that's a much more like actually morally complex thing to deal with. I mean, to make another reference to Promising Young Woman, it's one of the few things in that movie that I find to be pretty compelling is the whole, well, Bo Burnham was there and he saw what happened. And it wasn't a big deal. You know, it was pretty messed up to him, but to him it was something that he just had to block out of his brain. But you know, to everyone else, it was not. It was a big life-changing traumatic event. And, yeah. You know, therein lies the question of like, okay, well, this guy clearly deserves some kind of punishment, but what kind of punishment, you know? What does the fact that he knows that he deserves it make it better or worse? Like, these are questions that a movie could deal with. But the fact that this movie just needs to have a twist every 15 minutes and doesn't really allow for an organic dissemination of that information is a problem. I think the main problem in this script to me, and as much as I really love Elliot Page's, like as an actor showcase for a young Elliot Page, this movie's pretty phenomenal because it's just showing off like a, hey, look what this very young actor can do. Like, look at all the stuff he can do.
Yeah.
I think that character is kind of very poorly written.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. It is. Yeah, I mean, I think both of the performances at the center of this movie are both phenomenal. And like, that's the thing is it's kind of an exciting watch, I would say. Like, it's a thriller, right? Like,
it's engrossing.
Yeah, in that sense, it like does kind of work. But it kind of feels like this film either needs to be way less and have the same tone or way pulpier. Because like, okay, I kind of thought that like, okay, so first off, it was like first 20 minutes is it's very standard, like, you know, it's just like, oh, look at this situation. Like, we all know this is bad. Like, poor Elliot Page doesn't know that like Patrick Wilson is like, you know, is a bad dude because he's like nice and charming, and it's very textbook like grooming behavior and like what people, you know, and it kind of seems like, you know, it's the film is playing in that zone because the audience does not know that Haley is actually like the super genius, and you kind of think it's going to be like this relationship story, right, about like these two people and like what goes down between them and all that stuff. Then he passes out, and like before he even wakes up tied up, like once he's kind of like getting really woozy, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. She drugged him. Great.
Yeah.
I was like, great. Okay. I know what's going on now. Awesome. And then when she turns out to be like the super genius and has him like tied up to the chair, I thought it was going to be that for like the whole movie. Right. I thought the whole thing was going to be like, you have the guy tied to a chair. He technically has not done anything other than giving you alcohol, which is illegal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is illegal. An underage person alcohol.
Though actually she does pour it. So, you know, even that. Yeah, even that.
Yeah, but still, but to provide alcohol for a minor is a crime. Just like, he's done that, which is illegal. But like, in terms of like, he is a pedophile. He has not done anything that is yet illegal. And so I kind of thought that was going to be the movie, is this negotiation of just like, got nothing on me. Like, like, yeah, I handed you a bottle of vodka, fine. That's like a misdemeanor. And I'll just plead that I'm so sorry that you were this person that I met and were so nice. And I remembered what it was like when I was a teenager and wanted to be the cool older guy and give you some booze. Because, you know, some guys in my neighborhood did that for me as a kid. I'm like, I'm going to get off. But you've now drugged me, taken me hostage, like all of this stuff. And I thought it was kind of like this big negotiation. Then it kind of becomes this like, okay, well, I'm going to find all of your demons. I'm going to find all of your like, whatever. Okay. That still kind of plays into what I think this is going to be. Then it's, I am going to surgically castrate you.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is kind of where I kind of lose a lot of the steam with this movie. Because I think it's a very, I don't know, like, I don't know. I don't find, I understand the bodily harm element is, you know, bad and compelling, you know, for some audience members. But like, it is kind of like, for me, like, I just think it's kind of dumb, right? Like, I understand what it represents to that character and what it probably represents to a lot of like straight men who are watching the film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Not good. Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I understand that, but I am just kind of like, I don't know. It's like, but the flip side of that is I don't find that to be like a cool, empowering way to get back at somebody who would have victimized me, because it's like, that's not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the kind of fault. And I don't necessarily mean fault like, oh, it's so terrible, but just like, you know, the fault of a man writing a story like this is it's like, okay, and then how would Haley get back at him? And she cut off his genitals because like to the man writing it, that is the scariest fucking thing that could happen. And I don't think many young women are thinking like, how do I get back at him? Oh, I know. Let me cut off the genitals, because it is less about, because it's less about like, I want to emasculate you, and more like, you really psychologically harmed people. Like, you hurt people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like the, if I see how a straight man thinks of this and goes, oh yeah, the punishment fits a crime, but like, the punishment fits the crime, but like, I don't think a young woman is going to have that thought process.
No. No. The castration thing, that feels like, wait, it feels like what the cop in Little Children, I'm pretty sure he does have a line about, we should castrate the guy. Like, that is the thing that
exactly.
Shitty dudes, the way that they like express their displeasure with somebody who does sexual crimes is by coming up with this like, well, you're right. It's like an eye for an eye thing. It's like, the source of your crime is this, and therefore we shall cut off the source of your crime. But like, one, I don't think that that's a very adult way to think about justice. And two, it is very much like you're saying, not the thing that this little girl would, if she was reacting. It's also just the problem with her character too, that like, it's not that she's reacting to these events kind of in an emotional way that a real person would. The castration thing means that all of this is premeditated to a level that becomes psychopathic. Like, it means, you know, if a little girl thinks this is what I'm going to do in this situation, that doesn't mean that like, oh, she's like a plucky whiz kid that got in a little over her head and she's trying to get back for her friend. It means that she's a serial killer. It means that she's Hannibal Lecter. Like,
yes. And that, so, and so to that point, to go even a little bit deeper on this is like, I agree. And like you say, like, it's not an eye for an eye thing, or like, but, and that's kind of my issue with it, is it's like, I feel like for this young character, like, because an eye for an eye is, well, you took an eye, so you lose an eye, right? Like, you get back what you have done, right? And for survivors of sexual violence, it is the thing that is taken away from them is not like typically, is not typically a physical, like, you know, oh, and now like my body does not work sexually. It's mm-hmm. like, I now have this like complete lack of safety. I now have this, like, this fear that like any situation that could become that again is going to become that again, right? Like it is a sense of agency being taken away, and it is a sense of like, you know, loss of power and loss of agency, loss of personhood. So like, I'm just like, it's not an eye for an eye, because like, if you like, you know, I've told many of my friends in the past, like, mm-hmm. like, somebody ever fucks with you, like, I'll kill them. Like, I'll kick their ass. Yeah. I'll beat the shit out of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I say that, one, to just like, you know, mark myself as a safe person, but also two, like, also nobody ever takes me up on it, because it's not,
no.
That's not the thing that, you know, and so it's like, I don't feel like it's not an eye for an eye, because it isn't the same thing being done. And what I really thought was going to happen, is she's numbing his genitals, right? Like, that's just what happens in the film. She numbs his genitals.
Yeah.
And I thought what was going to happen is she was going to like do this whole song and dance, do this whole thing, like whatever. And then it was going to turn out, well, she didn't actually do it.
No, but that's what it, no, Caroline, that's what it is. The movie just doesn't communicate it well. I also did not notice this the first time I saw the movie.
Okay, because that's what I thought, but because like,
this was, I rewatched it today and I had to consult the Wikipedia, because I was like, wait, is the movie trying to say that she didn't actually do it? And yeah, that's the whole thing of him pulling the clip when he sits up. The movie just doesn't explore.
That's the point of him pulling the clip, because I took that to I took that to mean that the clip was on there to clamp a suture shut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he, because that was my exact thought, is he's going to reach down and there's going to be nothing there. But then he looks mm-hmm. at the knife and the knife is bloody. And then there's like the two shot glasses that are bloody by the sink. And like, I took the clip coming off to that she actually did it. And there was a suture there that she was clamping shut.
Yeah, look, I think that this is the fault of the movie, because I think that there's an active disagreement about it. And last time I watched it, that was my thought as well. But this time I watched it, I went, wait, he's not bleeding as hard as he would be. He'd be like fully passed out. He'd be worse. But also, you see the testicles. So like, and the Wikipedia says she doesn't do it. And I'm like, wait, but yeah, no, this is the thing. This is, I wanted to talk about this because I'm like, this is a major failing.
Well, that is a major failing, because I was like legitimately thinking like, okay, she's not actually going to do it. It's just going to be a ruse. Mm-hmm. And then when he goes and he investigates and everything's bloody, it doesn't say what she did to make it bloody, correct?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't know if maybe the, what you're supposed to take away is like, well, she did cut him, but she didn't do a surgery. Because that's also part of the, like, oh, you know, she keeps talking about how her dad's this doctor, and then at the end he's like, oh, you know, a dad, you know, girl from Calabasas whose dad's a doctor, and she's like, you think that that's real? You think that I actually told you, like, anything about my life? My name's not even Haley. Like, fuck you.
Right.
And so then you're led to believe, like, well, wait, it was any of this? Which, I don't know, is maybe even a little bit worse, because it implies an even further, like, it's not the case that she's trying to, like, get back at him. She's, like, playing with him. Like, it's a mind game. She's clear and clearly getting some kind of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, okay, so that's fascinating, because, like,
Yeah,
because I was completely under the impression, I was like, I literally was like, oh, and he's going to reach down and realize she didn't actually do anything. And then he reaches mm-hmm. down and he removes the clamp and he looks at the bloody scalpel. And then he goes over and I was like, wait, really? Like, we're really selling that she did it? I was like, that's kind of dumb. Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's wild. It's
okay.
It's
interesting. Well, then to my point that I was going to make before we went off on this, did it actually happen tangent? It's just, I then thought the ending was just going to be her being like, hey, like, I didn't actually do anything, but like, now you're never going to feel safe doing this again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that kind of being the now for the rest of your life, every time you like talk to somebody, you're going to wonder, like, are they like, you know, like anytime you think about talking to somebody underage, like you're going to think about this and realize that anybody could do this to you at any time. And like,
yeah,
which like is kind of corny, but
the promising young woman thing.
Right. Well, I think it's a little less the promising young woman thing though, because like, it's at least like, I don't know, like I would have liked that ending more if that was just the ending of just like, just so you know, the rest of your life, anytime you talk to somebody and you think like you try to do to somebody what you did to me, just remember, they might be the one to actually do what I said I was going to do to you. You know what I mean? And like, I thought that was going to kind of be the end, but then there's a whole third act.
Yeah.
Of like, I've actually figured out you're a murderer, which is like, it is set up earlier.
Yeah.
But like, cause he has like the souvenir, the picture, right? But it's like, I don't know. It's just the third act is like, oh, by the way, I know that you murdered her. And I know that because like, I knew her and actually like I called your ex-girlfriend and she's going to find out everything unless you kill yourself. Like there's so many hats. Like I think that thing is by the end, like Elliot Page could have quit acting to open a haberdashery with all of the hats that he was wheeling and dealing in this fucking movie.
Yeah, very correct. On by the time that you know, they're on like the third, you know, if you kill yourself, I'll do X deal. You're like, oh, okay, that's enough suicide pacts. That's cool.
Yeah, and then there's like the thing with Sandra. Oh,
yeah, which really is how fun.
That's really how it should go, and like it's fine, but like, I don't want to sit here and just like CinemaSins or whatever, but like really what I feel like is a more compelling film is Sandra Oh stops by for the first time with the cookies when she just has him tied to the chair.
Yeah.
And then, so then there's kind of like this ticking time bomb thing of like, she could stop by at any moment. Like you have to like get outside to see if the neighbor is like on to anything. And then kind of have more of a presence, and there can kind of like because I forgot, you know, I was like looking at this film before I like started watching it, and it's just like the poster is literally like Patrick Wilson, Elliot Page, Sandra Oh, and then like you get 90 minutes into the movie, you forget Sandra Oh's on the poster. It's been 90 minutes, Sandra Oh pops up, and you're like, oh my god, like I forgot that she's literally above the title in the film because she's the third person who speaks. Period. Other than like a barista, and then Janelle at the end has like two lines where she's just like, "Oh, I don't even remember Jeff." When she's just kind of wandering around his house, going, "Jeff, Jeff."
That I was like, "How can you forget that his name is Jeff?" Because Elliot Page says Jeff so many times. I know.
Look, it's been about 4 hours since I finished watching this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I think like to the point, it's almost ironic that we had a conversation about pronouns when Jeffs are never used because his proper name is used every time Haley refers to him.
Yes. Haley never once says he, him, or they, or them, or she, or her to refer to Jeffs. Maybe we shouldn't either. Maybe,
I don't know. Wouldn't that be a twist?
I'm not sure what Jeff's pronouns are because Jeff is only ever called Jeff. Jeff is really, whenever there's those like conservative assholes who are like, I don't have pronouns. Jeff actually doesn't.
Jeff does
That's
not.
The thing.
Jeff has eschewed pronouns. That is very true. No, I mean, all of this is to say, and again, it is kind of a asking the movie to be something that it's not. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, and it's been my thought too, is like the version of this movie that like feels like the version of this movie that does not have to be a thriller and does not have to include so much violence, I think is a lot more compelling. I don't think you need all the frenetic action and the body horror and the scares to like make this premise compelling. I think if it's just a movie of 90 minutes of she has him trapped in the chair and it is a conversation between these two good actors, mm-hmm. I think that there's enough, like, within that premise and within these two performances, I think there is enough to mine that you can get 90 minutes of very tense conversation. And I also think that movie just ends up being more philosophically and morally interesting because one of the characters, both characters can be, can operate in shades of gray. And the question can be, well, wait, how dark are the intentions of these two people? Whereas what this movie is now is like, they'll show one of them do the absolute worst thing imaginable and be like, but did they mean it? But are they justified in doing the worst thing that you can imagine? Mm. Like, you know, I just don't think is cool. It's less interesting.
Yeah, no, for real. Yeah. And so it's like, it's interesting because it's one of those films that it's just like, okay, what is. Yeah, it's like, okay, let's judge the film on its own terms, right? Like, I know that sometimes a film's own terms are, and I'm not saying this about Hard Candy because I don't believe this necessarily, yeah. But like, sometimes the terms the film is on are objectionable, right?
Yes.
And so sometimes by judging a film on its own terms, it becomes worse, right? Yeah, I don't necessarily think that about this film, but like, let's judge the film on its terms. And it's like, we are going to make a thriller about a, like, that an ultra smart child who Chris Hansen's a guy was definitely is willing to become a child predator. Yeah. Almost certainly is. Almost certainly has been. But like, mm-hmm. we're going to leave that a little ambiguous. And it's going to be the push and pull between a predator and like the person they thought was prey, but is actually there to get them, right?
Yeah.
And to some extent, to that end alone, film is kind of successful, but also then you think about it and you're like, yes, it is a thriller. And you're just like, okay, kind of like, how does a thriller traditionally work? And it's typically like a character is in a shit ton of danger and you have to watch them navigate the danger situation. Mm-hmm. Which then kind of retroactively makes Patrick Wilson the character you're rooting for, like, not on purpose. It's just like, he's the one who's in the danger. He's the one who has the stakes. So I almost think, like, so it's weird because you're like, yes, it's just a thriller about a kid who like captures a predator. And then it's like, what happens when that happens? And it's like, but for the most part, at least in terms of like, he's tied up, drugged, she has the knife, like she can like really exact whatever revenge she wants. It's kind of like the stakes all come from like, oh shit, is she actually gonna do it? But yeah. She does never seem morally conflicted about it. So it doesn't seem like there's not a question of like, oh, can she go there and do the thing that needs to be done? But instead, it's just like, she is morally self-assured. And so the tension all just comes from like, is this vengeance going to be acted out upon Patrick Wilson? Which then makes you kind of unconsciously pull for Patrick Wilson a little bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's the other problem with the castration scene is that like once she demonstrates a willingness to do permanent physical damage to him, that like boosts that, you know, that like double extra pluses that feeling in your mind. Cause then once he gets up and gets a knife, you're like, yeah, get her. Like she's skulking around in the shadows to attack him. You're just like, you know, he becomes the final girl and she's the monster in that situation. Like that's what the filmic language is now implying.
Right. Correct. No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And again, there's not in a movie that like, and again, it is, if I think if you're judging this movie in its own terms, it's successful because I think this movie is pretty, pretty head empty, no thoughts. Like, I really don't think it's trying to say that much. I don't. It's just got a lot of ideas that it doesn't really care to mine into. But I, as an audience member, would really like it to mine into those ideas a little bit and to have a point of view. And yes, certainly there is a version of a movie in which the, you know, that inversion is more meaningful and you as the audience are meant to, you know, be a little bit reviled at your, once you kind of look up and go, oh my God, I've been rooting for this predator this whole time. And then you are reviled by the fact that you've done that. You know, better media about anti-heroic figures has done that and done it well. It's not impossible.
Right. But and then
not the point of this movie.
Right. Or like, you know, almost like, yeah, it's just, it's a mess because the flip side of it is, you know, the flip side of it too is like, I don't know how you, I don't exactly know how you make this happen, but it's like the fact that it's all premeditated is what like kind of gives me quite a bit of pause because it's, yes, like other way is to flip the power dynamic and make it so that this was not a planned thing. And that, mm-hmm, like somehow like, you know, like Elliot Page is like, is, you know, actually an innocent child and is like bamboozled into all of this and then realizes what, you know, what this means. And then, you know, and then Haley as a character has to then like grapple with like, okay, like, you know, maybe it's like one of those things where it's like the hostage becomes the powerful one. Right. And it's just like,
yeah,
you know, Haley as a character, like, is able to narrowly escape and, like, bonk him over the head and tie him up. And then she has to decide, like, what do I do from here? Then it's, like, you know, then it's, like, this moral quandary. But it is just the thing of, like, she is so self-assured, like, I've already done this before.
Yes, yes. That's the other thing about that, the reveal of, no, why, this is my, like, second time doing one of these.
Right. So it's just, like, it's, like, I either want this film to, like, shift the power dynamic so that it's actually like, it's actually pretty dope to see Patrick Wilson maybe get his genitals cut off. Or I want it to be, I want it to be schlockier. Like it needs to be a little more like Home Alone. It needs to be a little more like, you know, like this zany kid with a fucked sense of, with a righteous and nobly intended but fucked sense of justice. Like you're now like the asylum's now being run by the inmates, right? Like you took a kid hostage, but you took the wrong kid hostage.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun. Right. And like, but instead it's just this weird thing that like begs to be taken seriously from the tone of the film to like the psychological realism of the performances to like everything about it. Then it doesn't have much to say other than like, wouldn't it be pretty bad if someone was a pedophile? And to that end, I must say, David Slade, I fucking agree, my guy.
Correct.
I agree wholeheartedly. It would be bad if someone was a pedophile.
Agreed. It's between the premeditation, the fact that this is the second time she's done one of these, and all of the lying and the confusion as to what, not only like what, if Haley's actually her real name, you know, what her background is, that all this has kind of been a lie, but like that so much of what has been brought into question, because everything is constantly being brought into question, you get to the point where you're like, you can't really ever identify with Haley because you don't know who she is or what she wants.
Right.
Like, you know, she wants to fuck with this guy, but you, and you kind of assume that it's for just reasons because she keeps saying that it is, but there comes a point where you stop believing her.
Right.
Because it starts to feel like this is just, this is fun for her. This is a, you know, there's an element of this, which is a game because she's, well, because Elliot Page is playing it so confidently because he's got a real bravado about this character, which is pretty good to watch in isolation, but in the context of this film really detracts from what that character's place in the entire plot.
No, 110%. Yeah. Have you watched the most recent ContraPoints essay?
I did. I just finished it. The Twilight one.
Yes. So
that is a great video.
It is fucking phenomenal. And her ability to play like nine dimensions chess to then make an incredibly excellent point 3 hours later, it never ceases to amaze me. But like she has a lot of content in there about you know, about like fiction is not reality, and like what we want to see on screen or what we want to read in a book or like the fantasies we have or the fictions we want to create do not one-to-one reflect desires we secretly have in reality, right?
Yeah.
So I think there is room to have a really cool, interesting movie about a kid who premeditate murders a predator.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, there's some fun genre stuff you can do in there. You could make that movie fun. You could make that movie interesting. I think that, like, there is a way to, like, make a story about that is not necessarily, like, that doesn't have to contend with, you know, kind of the confines of reality. However, because the style of this film is so like hard boiled and gritty and real and raw,
yeah.
It's like it very much makes you think about the real world implications and like, what if this is real? Like, okay, this mm-hmm. film wants me to imagine this is fucking reality happening next door to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah,
like
Danny Boyle shaky cam and the
yeah, like dude, I love the John Wick movies. I think mm-hmm. ultra violence can be really fun. I think self-righteous ultra violence can be neat and interesting. And I have never so much as thrown a single punch at a human being, right? Like I've never so much as hit somebody. So like I don't need to actually secretly want to do ultra violence to enjoy seeing it on screen. Right? Like, but yeah, this film is off in that regard.
Yeah. Are you familiar with, and we can talk about this more at length when we do our long-awaited Last of Us video game episode, our special patron, when you finally finish that video game.
Yeah, which probably never happen, but go off.
No, it's going to happen eventually. You'll get there. But... Are you familiar with the Elliot Page controversy surrounding The Last of Us?
Well, wasn't it a thing where like, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but before Elliot Page transitioned, like a lot of people were like, thought that character looked like pre-transition Elliot Page. And some people online were like, oh, that actor should play that character. And then other people were like, no, not Juno.
Yeah. So The Last of Us video game comes out in 2011. I am like, I love The Last of Us. It is my favorite video game. I've played it a lot. I've watched the TV show. The two main characters, Joel and Ellie. Ellie is a teenage girl, is like 13 or 14. And the name of the character is Ellie. The character design bears a striking resemblance to, Elliot Page in this movie, a young pre-transition Elliot Page.
Yes.
And a lot of, you know, fan people are calling out like, oh, do the movie adaptation, cast this actor, put, you know, and Elliot Page, I believe, was involved in a lawsuit saying like, no, you actually like stole my likeness. Yeah. Which was, I don't think was a major lawsuit. I'm pretty sure they settled out of court. It wasn't a thing. I don't really think it's something that he talks about much anymore, but I have always kind of thought like, oh, well, you know, that's kind of silly. Like obviously a lot of other stories, you'll kind of start with an actor or a character type as inspiration and then grow from it. When I first saw this movie, I was like, holy shit, they ripped off Elliot Page's likeness specifically from Hard Candy, because there is one of probably the best level in The Last of Us is hugely inspired by this movie. And I defend it because it takes the premise of this movie and just does it 100
good.
Times better, does it good, and makes some necessary changes to make it, you know, just a lot more moral, not even morally clear. It's still a very morally gray thing, but more like philosophically engaging, and also turns it into a video game that you play rather than a movie that you watch. And the thing that, so the whole situation in that part of the game is essentially the character Ellie gets separated from her, you know, apocalypse father figure, Joel. He is hurt there. It's the middle of winter. He's like in a coma, basically medically. So she's been out like hunting deer and, you know, scrounging and getting food for them to survive through the winter. She encounters two travelers. It's this big standoff. It's this really great scene in the movie where it's like, hey, neither of us trust, but they're like, you're a little girl. Like, and she pulls out a gun and is like, hey, no, I need medicine. You need food. We'll do a little trade ski. And neither party is really being 100% honest with each other. And that's kind of the drama of the scene. But then zombies show up. So essentially, Ellie, the character, gets captured by this guy who you find out is like a predatory pedophile. And then they engage. There's like this weird, you know, pseudo enemy relationship that they have. The thing that relationship keeps from this movie, which is, I think, the thing about this movie that works the best, is that you have this situation in which there is this weird dynamic where this child character is always kind of being treated like a child and being babied. But oddly, the one person that talks to them on an equal level and kind of treats them as an adult is the predator. And as a result, they have this relationship that is very clear, where they are just, you know, the predator is saying, these are my intentions. This is what's going on here. I'm not going to talk down to your intelligence because weirdly, you know, because of their fucked up psychology, treats this child essentially as an adult. And it is very scary and very compelling in The Last of Us. And it is the thing about this movie that I think works the best is essentially that idea combined with these two very, very good performances. Like, they legitimately have very good chemistry, these two. But for the many reasons that we have discussed in this episode, none of that crystallizes into a story that is, in my opinion, particularly worth telling.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So here's the thing about Hard Candy. Investigation. Does Carson hate this movie?
I don't think you should hate it.
No, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I'll say I did not watch a lot of the castration scene this time because I just didn't want to.
I think that's very fair.
Yeah, I said, I'm going to go wash dishes right now while this plays.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah, in terms of do I hate this movie? I don't hate it. Like, I don't really begrudge this movie. I just don't think it's particularly interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that this film, in a way that, like, and again, talked about this before, representation of experience is important. And we should have as diverse of like representation of experience as humanly possible in our art and in our media, because specific forms of representation only become bad if like they are the sole, like the sole way that thing is like rendered on screen, right? And like if that's the way that like experiences are, like, you know, if the cultural narrative becomes dominated by like one particular way of like understanding it. So like in the way that like I personally find a film like Promising Young Woman to actually be like kind of regressive and gross in a lot of ways and kind of unhelpful in many ways, in my own personal opinion, I don't think this film is bad for the culture. Like, yeah. I don't think it's a problem that this film exists. I just think it's kind of nothing.
Yeah, no, it's you know? Just pure entertainment. It has no agenda.
Yeah. Yeah.
In an almost, like, fucking David Mamet-esque way, this movie just, like, challenges you to be like, what do you think we're saying about this? We're not saying anything. It's a fucking movie. Like, sit up and watch it. It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. You know, David Slade directed a lot of really good episodes of television and also the worst Twilight movie. So good for him, I guess. Patrick Wilson. God, what a guy.
What a guy. Good performance.
Good guy. Good performance. They kind of ugly him up in this movie a little bit. You notice that?
Yeah, it's hard to do, though. What's the opposite of you can't polish a turd?
Like, you can't
tarnish the most beautiful man on the planet.
You can't scuff a diamond. I don't know.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't defile God's most divine creation.
It's, you know, if anything, this movie's heretical because it presupposes that Patrick Wilson has ever committed a sin.
Right. Correct. Indeed. Yeah. Patrick Wilson, the one man born without original sin.
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely. Oh God. All right. Is that hard candy? Do you have any other thoughts about this
hard
movie?
Candy. That's fantastic. Hard candy.
Corey, would you like to tell the fine folks at home where they can, if for some goddamn reason they want to hear us talk more after talking about this movie for an hour?
They do. They want to hear it all.
Hear about us talk about a movie that's not this one. Please tell the fine folks at home where they can find more about this podcast.
Absolutely. If you like what you hear, please be sure to like us and subscribe wherever you stream your podcasts. Leaving a review would also really help out the visibility of the show. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, all at HHYNSpod. Special thank you to our patrons. If you'd like a shout out on the show and bonus content, head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/HHYNSpod.
Thank you very much. Ah, ta lucka ti Irish, and so goes St. Patrick's Month.
Yes, we love you.
There he goes. He's wearing the night owl costume, and he's flying over the green hills. Back to, I don't know, I assume his home in L.A., where he lives with Dagmara.
Yes.
We'll see him next year. That being said, Caroline, next week.
Yeah, so, you know how sometimes we like to do a little joke here where it's like we come up with a really overwrought way of aligning, of like comparing next week's film to this week's film?
Yes.
This is maybe the worst thing I'll ever say on this podcast. Next week's film is the movie. It 100% is a movie about an older man and a younger woman.
Oh, really?
just in a much different way. And I hate that I looked at the schedule and saw what we were doing next week and said, there's the parallel that you could put in here. It's directed by somebody who's never directed a Twilight film, likely never will. Although her take what is it? Midnight Sun? Is that Twilight?
Really Twilight cool.
From Edward's perspective, I would watch. Yeah. I'd watch the shit out of that.
I mean, The Beguiled really has the tone of a Twilight film. I'm not going to lie. I think that'd be a pretty good movie. I'd watch the shit out of that.
Kirsten, I haven't even told you what movie we're doing yet.
Oh, true. I don't even know what you're talking about.
No, next week we are doing Lost in Translation, directed by Sofia Coppola.
Wow, very exciting. I'm excited. I'm legitimately very excited to watch that movie. It's crazy that I haven't seen that one yet.
As you should be, kind of insane you haven't seen this movie. And kind of fucking insane. But what can you do? You can go host a podcast about it and watch the movie, kind of like we do every
year. You have to. Exactly.
That's what you could do.
That's what you do.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you all next week when we talk Lost in Translation.